Go for Growth Show, powered by Beepo.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Go for Growth Show. My name is Mark Engelman, and I'll be your host today. Very happy to welcome Belinda Veazey-Brown today. Welcome, Belinda.
Hi, everyone.
So let's get straight into it, Belinda. You own a number of businesses, but I guess you've always kind of played in that design, marketing, and brand space. Can you tell me about what a company's brand is and why is it really that important for companies to get right?
Yeah, I guess I've got to clear up the thing that I get asked all the time is, what's the difference between a brand and a logo? And it's hard to believe that people don't understand the difference. So if it's okay, Mark, if I can take a few minutes just to explain that.
Yeah.
So a logo is essentially, it's that symbol or that shape that basically identifies you. It's like your badge. So it goes, oh, well, that's Woolworths or that's Coles. Whereas your brand is more about, it's who you are. It's what you stand for. It's how you answer the phone. It's the stories you tell and the way you tell those stories. It's everything, the type of people you employ. And that's what makes a brand. That's what you're actually talking to a neuromarketing then perspective, is that this brand feels right, therefore I'm going to buy it. So you feel it and then you rationalize why then you want to buy it. And that just comes back to a neuromarketing sense, but really the logo is just the symbol and that the brand is everything else.
Yeah, great. And so what's neuromarketing?
Oh, I love neuromarketing. Yeah, neuromarketing is basically, it's buying behavior. So understanding buying behavior. If you think about, let me just give you the idea of home and away. So home and away has been on basically as long as you and I have been alive, right? Elf is still going. And you're like, well, why is that show still going? You know, because it's a show, they need to market it. And what they do really well is that they open a loop in our mind. So at the end of every episode, there's something that doesn't quite get answered in our mind, like who's going to die or what's going to happen with their relationship. And so they open this loop in our mind that then we have to come back tomorrow to find out the answer. And so you can do that in traditional marketing. You can do that in almost anything, even conversations. So I could tell you about something but not give you the answer, Mark, say, until the end of this interview. So I could tell you at the end what the best neuromarketing technique is. You've got to wait.
All right. Well, listeners, you have to wait for the whole interview to finish to get the secret. So, you know, from my point of view, brand ties in pretty closely to a business's overall strategy. If you're working with a business, what's the process you go through to develop their brand?
You have a job and you go, I just love my job, because I love digging out of people who they are and what they stand for. And I'm talking about it in a business context. So, like we've done a dentist, and so you know you would argue that a dentist sells smiles, and a lot of people sort of say that. What are you really selling? Well, we've got this dentist is actually selling now on a subscription, so they've actually changed up their business model. So instead of seeing as waiting for a toothache to come, you actually are proactive around your health. But if you can use technology and science, even your mouth is your window to the rest of your health. And so that is what this brand is now disrupting. They're basically saying, don't just come to us when you have a toothache. Pay on subscription, you know what the cost is, and you come four times a year and we're going to use saliva tests and check your gum health and fix all these things. It's actually giving us an insight into how your overall health is. Yeah. You're like, well, sign me up for that. And so I love digging out that type of context. You know, we're selling aged care on advocating for our elders. It's incredibly exciting when you really get down into what those businesses are really selling, when it's not just their product or service. Yeah. What are they actually providing for people? We've got a government client, they sell this piece of software and it informs government and it goes right up to the top ministerial level, where then it says, well, we can now see all the information that's happening in all federally, what's happening in all of the departments that we can then make policy around. Yeah. And that's exciting. And that's what they're really selling. They're not selling the software. They're selling information to inform policy. And when they get that, and that's that moment, when they get that, you're like, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So we take them on that journey. And there's some neuromarketing that's involved in that. And it's very exciting when they understand it, because then you can tell the stories. And storytelling's been around since caveman days. Yeah. And if we're telling that story and that brand and how we fit into that, and what we're actually really selling you, then it just, it's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess understanding what you actually do goes hand in hand with understanding who your target market is, right? And then that obviously heavily influences how you should brand and how you want people to perceive what you do.
Yeah. And if you understand that audience and who you're talking to, then you're just telling stories that they understand, that they can really resonate.
Yeah.
And, cool. It's two-way conversation then. And I love it.
Yeah. Awesome. And so Brandonian is the name of your brand agency. Is that right?
Yes. So Brandonian is our strategy business.
Yep.
So we built a process around that. So we do a workshop and then we build a context document. And then we start to roll that out in a 90-day plan. And that's where it switches over to my other business, because, Mark, you can never have just one business. But my second business, which is Brio Group, which is my longest business. I've had that for 17 years. And that's more of tactical marketing. And that's where we take the context or the who you are, what you stand for, your point of difference. And then we start to tell those stories through a 90-day plan that's tactical. So these are your 10 touch points, if it's new leads or nurture. And then we start to measure conversion rates and, average dollar sales. And so you start to get a proven recipe, but it's coming from a very tactical position. So businesses can then know, well, I need to dial this up or I need to dial that down. And you're learning more about your audience on the way. And that's exciting too. Because what you think in your behavior is doesn't always play out.
Yeah, so, cool. Yeah,
I love learning about
that. I love the fact that, you know, you've got your Brio Group, which is kind of like the marketing tactics, and then you've got the brand, and you've kind of like, looking at it from that supply chain point of view, you're kind of starting to lock it down and sort of start to own, you know, a decent whack of that supply chain, which is really, really smart.
That came about because it was hard to find people that could think strategic and then could also do really well tactically. So that's why we just separated it out. We have a process on the strategic, different team. Like my team actually are marketers, but they also have psychology. So when we're doing an NLP training, so when we do the workshops, it's really interesting how we pull information out. And then we'll get in there, the tactical marketing, to get the result based on that position.
Yeah, great. And any other businesses?
One more, Tagged PDF, which is, it sits a little bit away, but still linked from a marketing context, and came about actually through Brio Group, because we were doing a lot of work for Brisbane City Council. And for example, we did their annual report, and then that, there's a federal law that's come out, it's quite a number of years old now, but it's all about accessibility. And so you need to meet an accessibility standard. So what that means is that with that annual report that we created, there were some copies that were printed, but most of it was put up, because we're in the digital age, so they put it up on the website, their Brisbane City Council website, and then you download it, and then you want to be able to read it. So imagine if you're someone with low vision, or you're elderly, or maybe you're just an auditory, you learn because you hear things. That document needs to meet the standard, needs to be able to be read out to you. So there's a little bit of programming or coding that needs to go in behind that says, this is a heading, this is a picture of, you know, Lord Mayor, you know, doing blah, blah, blah. This is a table, and so you've got this cell plus this cell equals this cell, and so on. So it basically is a process that enables that document to be read out accurately, so there's no discrimination. You can consume the content. But it's all about communication, right?
Yeah.
So that's sort of the link with when we saw, well, it's a different skill set that my design guys really didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And really needed a bit of a programming background to be able to do it. So if you think about, you know, you've got a 400-page document, it's a little bit repetitive, but yet so crucial that it's very, very accurate.
Yeah.
And so I started a new business on that. No one was really owning that space in Australia. And so we built that up, wrote training and have been training team. And then I did a partnership deal with Vision Australia. So we're actually setting the standard now in Australia on, how these documents should be remediated. And there's many, many variables on what's best practice. You know, should you have the headline, then the picture, and then the article, or should you have the headline, you know, and so on. What sort of things should you design? So even writing and designing for accessibility is something that not many people know. So even by default, we're now informing departments and businesses around how to write content that when it's read out makes sense. and how to apply, you know, captions to photos, and even how to distill information into graphs and things like that, just to make it accessible. And there's colours, contrasts, and things like that. So even designing for accessibility fits into what we do in Verify as well. But see, there is a bit of a link. There's a bit of a link.
Yeah.
Very, very left of field.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. How does that make you feel having a business that really helps you know, people, you know, have a better life and have better access to information? You know, I
think it's a really interesting business in that it can give back in so many ways. And I think we're at a point where technology is starting to catch up, where we will have the opportunity to have something read out that we've created from a PDF document, say read out in our car in the not too distant future. But we need to think about how we're actually making that content and how that's being able to be read out. But you know, what I've really learned is that the people with low vision, that whole community, never have been catered for in the online space, you know, very well. And so they have this low expectation that, you know, finding a remediated or a tagged PDF that has been enabled to be read out is like a little bit at the moment like finding a needle in a haystack. And so we've actually started a naming convention so that they can find them, so that it's starting to become a lot more inclusive. And they're so humble that they don't even ask for it.
Yeah.
But you take the Commonwealth Games, you know, if you've signed up, you've got your ticket, you want to be able to download that, you know, that agenda and know when, what's on and where. And what was actually we did this crazy, it was this map of the Gold Coast. We had these little dots everywhere about, you know, weightlifting's here and swimming's here and here and here. And, you know, we basically had to write some alt text or some descriptive text that went in behind that, because we could all see it. You could go, well, that's where swimming is, it's on that street, and it's, you know, that's where you park. Well, we had to write text that described all of that. And there's a real art to that succinctly too, because what we know about, you know, human brains and learning is that you can't be too long, because you'll tune out.
Yeah.
But another thing is really interesting, if you see someone with low vision actually utilising one of the documents we've created, they have it, that the speed is really quick. You know, it's like blah, 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 blah. Like we almost couldn't comprehend what's being said. But they can. That they've just tuned their senses. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so moving on a little bit, you've got three businesses. You know, and when I think about people who might be employed and they might be, you know, looking at going out on their own, starting their own business, that sort of thing. The idea of alone of just quitting their job and starting a business, for most people, is really overwhelming. And, you know, all of these, it's almost like every excuse under the sun comes out as to why they shouldn't do that. But you've got three businesses. How do you make it all work and find time for all the other things in your life?
Yeah, I know. Well, I like business. I like being able to create something. So that's why I potentially went out on my own, is that I had this idea and this vision. So I just gave it a go. What's the worst thing that can happen? I could always get a job.
Yep.
But how do I manage three businesses? Well, I think it's important, and this is what I've learned over the many years that I have been in my own business, is that it's important to also have a balance. So why I really love business, and that gives me a lot of energy, so does spending time with my family, so does spending time on my health, and so does spending time with friends. And so it's important to me that I have those areas that are always being activated within a month, that I'm doing something in all. Because then if something's going bad in one area, so if you've got a tragedy in your family, then your business is good. And so you've got these different safe areas that you can go to. So not everything goes, you know, sort of can it doesn't become all consuming, because you have these safer areas. Because I learned that the hard way, because I was very obsessed with business in my early years, and I spent all my time doing that, and I didn't see my friends and I didn't see my family. And then, you know, that was a massive learning for me. So yeah, definitely a piece of advice that you want to, when you start your own business, then you can't be all consuming. You need to get balance.
Yeah, totally. And I think the benefit of owning your own business is having that flexibility. You know, you don't have to be in an office 9 to 5.
No.
You know, you can, if you need a break, you can just get up and go and do something else for half an hour or so, and then come back and get stuck into the work again. So yeah, it's good.
No, it's good.
So what's your number one tip for business owners looking to grow their business?
Yeah, I read that you're going to ask me that, Mark, and actually I've been thinking on that.
Yeah.
And what I've written down here is, I think you really need to know why you're different. And this is fundamentally then why I've created my brand strategy business, because I see so many great businesses that they come in here and that they want help with their branding and their marketing, but no one knows about them. And that's because they don't really know who they are and what their main point of difference is against their competitors. Especially if you're playing in, like if I just take mold removal, for example, there's a lot of businesses that's something that we need to do, you know, generally once a year or, you know, once every few years. And so when you're going and looking for that type of service, you have a perception as to what you'll find. And all of those are basically the same. But what if you stood apart because you knew who you were and what you stood for? And so that really is, I guess, my key insight into what businesses should do is that never compete on price. Really know who you are and really etch out that point of difference and sell through every touch point on it.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And have you used any technology apps or services recently that have really assisted you in saving time or growing and scaling?
Yeah, well, certainly a lot of the work that we do is, you know, done on the computer, if you like. But what I really do love is that you can find somebody who's a specialist in something that you need. We did a little bit of work with Lockyer Valley Council, and they, you know, they got a lot of tractors out there because it's a farming community. And we had to put this little money box for them that was in the shape of a tractor. And so none of my guys are, you know, had any experience doing that, but we used, you know, the world to source somebody who's a specialist in that. And I think that was a great outcome for the client that was done, you know, quickly and very accurately because that's what they specialised in. Mm. I think that with the work that we do from a tactical perspective, you can get a lot of team, in offshoring models where, you know, they can do work that was never possible before because the hourly rate is low. So you can add a lot of value by data mining, by, you know, managing accounts, by looking for influencers, especially in the digital space. I still remember this offshore example, which was looking at satellite photos and when calculating where pools could go, and then working up an advertising campaign really targeted to individual houses. So you couldn't afford to do that with Australian labour, but yet you can do that easily by using, you know, offshore models. And I think that adds so much value back to your client. And it's something that's one-to-one, right, which is what we all, you know, want and expect now.
Yeah, I heard a similar story about a solar energy company that looked at Google Maps as well and found all the houses that didn't have solar panels on their roof and then hit them up.
With a deal. So, well, we're in the area. We can use deal.
Yeah.
And medical was another one. So, you know, just taking, you know, medical practice and even where technology is leading us in that space, but having different opinions in different countries and, you know, getting it almost instantly is amazing.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, just looking at the way that the direction that marketing is taking these days and, you know, that whole digital space, it's so resource intensive to create content and, you know, because you have to, if you want to rank high in Google, which is how people are going to find you, you need to create content regularly and you know, keep a healthy website that's continually being updated and with relevant, engaging information, right? And if you're not doing that, then you won't get ranked on Google and no one will be able to find you. So that's super resource intensive. And I know that, you know, I just look at, you know, a lot of staff that use offshore marketing teams to help with that implementation piece and graphic design and, you know, video editing and all that sort of stuff. So
done really well and, you know, really quickly. And it's awesome.
Yeah, cool.
Now, I've got to close that loop for you, Mark.
Yes, you do.
I've got to give you the one neuromarketing that rules them all, basically. There's lots of little things like opening loops in minds and things like that. But the one that that we use, that we love, and we use that for our strategic brand positioning, is called Archetypes. And Archetypes is Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist. He came up with this name. But basically, it's a brand personality. So we assign a brand personality to you. So like you could be the hero, for example, Mark. You know,
nice.
You could be the hero brand. When you think about a hero, right? You know, we have an idea of what that means. It's the knight in shining armor. You're going to be there when I need you. Mm-hmm. You know, you probably make yourself available to me at different times. And so there's this deception or this understanding that we already have, as Carl Jung said, you're born with, that we just leverage or we use within a marketing context, so that we're actually talking to your subconscious when you're making a buying decision, going, well, I'm sick of all these people never being there when I need them. And yet now this brand is now going to be there. And I really, I want that because no one's in that. And so there's 12 different characters. Hero is one, outlaw is another, because you can't have a good guy without the bad guy. The bad guy in our context is a rebel. So they challenge convention, like Apple is a rebel brand.
Yeah.
And or caregiver and so on. So it's about anchoring back to this character that underpins everything that you do in your branding. And it's, you know, it's your competitors can't copy that, and you no longer need to compete on price.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people, especially startups that I speak to, they always fall down when it comes to that price part. I think everyone's, not everyone, a lot of people are afraid of charging too much or being seen to charge too much and sort of pricing themselves out of the market. But I think that's a big mistake.
People pay for something if it's you know, or the perception is that it's going to give me something I haven't been able to get before.
Correct.
Like dentistry on subscription or,
yeah.
You know, aged care that's actually going to advocate for me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as long as you communicate the value so people understand what they're paying for, then, yeah. Exactly. And there's the whole saying that if something's free, people aren't going to buy it because they don't see the value in it. So it's an interesting kind of paradoxical kind of conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually.
Awesome. Well, Belinda, thanks. That's all the questions I've got today. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
And yeah, we'll chat soon.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
The Go for Growth Show, powered by Beepo.